I'm so excited that we have Innovate Digital Solutions as a sponsor of HeCast this season. Innovate Digital Solutions provides anything that an office might need, hardware, software, IT, copy machines, things like that. They make an office run more smooth, and they're really good at it. But one of the things that I love about Innovate, their founders, Andre and Katia Brasso, they're people that don't just believe it's important to build a strong business, but also to take that success and build the strong community around them. They really have a heart for what HeChanged is doing. People they love have gone through some of the stuff that we talk about on this show. Andre and Katia both believe that you can build a life worth living, and there are these evidence-based solutions that can help build that life. We're so excited to be in partnership with Innovate Digital Solutions, and HeChanged It is better for it, and we hope you will be too. Go to innovate.ca and check them out.
Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of HeChanged It. As always, I am Mike Chisholm. As always, I am so excited to be here and talk to folks who have common thoughts about where we're at in the world when it comes to men's mental wellness, have a love and a heart for wanting to help that cause. And boy, is today the bullseye when it comes to that. Jeremy Grader is the co-host of the Fit Mess podcast. You can go to thefitmess.com and check out the show that he and Zach are just absolutely killing it with. Hey, Mike, you're going to send people to another men's mental wellness podcast? Doesn't that mean, you know, you might lose viewers? No. And you know what? Whatever. It's going to work out how it works out. And these guys are absolutely changing the world. We do this show because we're wanting to support the He Changed It app. If you haven't downloaded the app, what the heck are you waiting for? Go to HeChangedIt.com, find the Apple, find the Android, whatever your technological allegiance is given to. You can go and download the app right now. But this podcast is all about having these discussions. And the one thing I love about Jeremy is, and many other podcast hosts, that it's just, there's a culture here. And we talk about that. We talk about how he got into, you know, he left the world of broadcasting, some of the things that he saw, and how he became a podcast host, why this slant went from the previous podcast that he was hosting over to a place that could be a beacon of light for men to go to. Entertaining, insightful. If you look at the list of guests that they have had on their show, it is unbelievable. Jeremy is just a hell of a guy. I can't wait to connect with him and Zach more. Today it's just Jeremy. Maybe we have Zach on. Maybe I go on their show. But we're going to collaborate regardless, because at the end of the day, we want to be a solution for men out there. Without further ado, HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It, is proud to present my conversation with Jeremy Grader. Okay, Jeremy, here's the thing that I love. I love commonalities, and I love Foxhole Buddies. You are both. We both host men's mental wellness podcasts, and from different perspectives, and different vantage points and experiences and all of that stuff, but we're both in the same thing. How long have you been hosting the Fit Mess podcast?
Every time I say 5 years, I find out it's 6 or 7. So I think we're somewhere between 5 and 7 years. Yeah, I'm not sure anymore.
Wow.
How many episodes? I've been podcasting since 2004. I started back when it was, you know, duct tape and shoestring to make it happen. So I've been doing this a while.
You saw where the puck was going. You totally saw where the puck was going.
Honestly, my brother did, right? I worked in radio. I was fairly new to it. I was about 5 years into my career in radio. Yep. I only was in radio because my brother loved it, and whatever my brother did, I had to be interested in. So I got really curious. I actually ended up working in it, and he's still a fan of it. But he was the one that found this podcasting thing. He lived in California. I lived in Seattle. He called me up one day and said, "Hey, man, you love radio. I love radio. Let's do this podcasting thing." I said, "What in the world is that?" And once I found out, we dove in and we actually did a comedy show together for about a dozen years.
Comedy as in you guys throwing out material, or comedy as in we're talking about talking to stand-ups, talking with like what kind of comedy podcast?
A little, but we interviewed tons of like world-class, you know, celebrities, entertainers across the board. But for the most part, it was him and I and our friend Stacy getting completely hammered and just talking about the ridiculous nonsense that happened in our lives. It was very much like kind of your standard morning show thing, with a lot more beer and tons of profanity and just that kind of thing, right?
That is fantastic. For me, it was probably Kevin Smith, I think, was probably the guy that I sort of jumped into, because I've been listening to them, from I believe the very beginning. Kevin Smith was one of the first anyways, Corolla a little bit as well. But when Kevin Smith got into the game, I kind of moved over there and as a medium, I just loved it, because I'll tell you, and you're probably similar growing up. When Stern switched from terrestrial over to Sirius, that was great, but it wasn't an on-demand deal. You still had to be there for the hours and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. The convenience of podcasting just captured my imagination immediately, as did the no seatbelts, let's just do what we want to do kind of aspect of it. Fell in love with it immediately. It sounds like we're also brothers from another mother when it comes to that.
Yeah, when Stern's radio show ended, those of us that were podcasting were so excited, because we thought, clearly he's going to podcast and he's going to put podcasting on the map. And so we thought that was going to be the thing that kicked the door open. And of course, that's not the way that he ended up going. But
no,
I think podcasting is doing okay now. I think it's found its path.
And we talked about this a little bit before we hit the record button, but isn't the cult, like, we talk about men's mental wellness and whatnot, there's a part of me that's like, okay, I just want the culture of podcasting to kind of overlay to the modern for modern men. Like, the culture of podcasting is incredible. The trade, I'll help you help me, and let's all just help each other, and everybody's gonna find their audience where they find their audience, but let's just encourage each other. And I don't know that I've ever encountered a group of people, maybe scrapbookers are pretty friendly to each other, but I don't know if I've ever encountered a group of people in the same kind of genre that are more helpful and friendly. And it's an amazing culture, isn't it?
I think it's because we all know that we're all we got, right? Like, there's nobody's figured it out yet. Spotify, they keep throwing money at it and pulling money back because they realize it was, they spent too much. Nobody's figured out how to actually make this thing a thing.
Yeah.
There's each little show kind of has their little island, and the tried and true formula of get famous, start a podcast, make $1 million works every time, right? It's just that whole getting famous first part that gets in the way. So the rest of us out here are scrapping for attention, trying to be the ones that figure out what is going to be the key that opens the door for all of us to see that success. But I think we're very close, because there's so many studies now that are showing that people trust podcasts more than they trust mainstream media. They trust podcasts more than news, which in some ways kind of scares me, but also the state of the news is pretty questionable, so who knows? But there's just so much promise in giving a voice directly to all of us to say whatever we want. And as scary as that is, and as much as that opens the door to a lot of propaganda and nonsense, it also opens the door to a lot of new ideas that otherwise wouldn't see the light of day.
Well, and it's funny, I find that a lot of the people who attract to the medium, and the medium seems to be growing exponentially, of course, the number of shows that are out there. I think 6 million podcasts have had at least their first episode, and then it, of course, drops off after, there's a bunch of people who have tried it, and then it doesn't get past episode 3 or 4 or whatever, but 6 million. But the audience, I'm it's so crazy. I'm seeing so many more like seniors who have discovered how to access a podcast and they fall in love with it and whatnot. What I find is that it's a lot of people who are sick and tired of the soundbite. Mm-hmm. And whatever it is, whether it's drama, whether it's political, whether it's sports, whether it's entertainment related, whatever it is, people just, and conversational especially, people just seem to start loving the long form. And it's kind of a throwback to the idea, instead of what we're fed being like, you can say it in 30 to 45 seconds and that's it. I think that there is a pushback to that. And podcasting is certainly, when you see how big it is in the numbers, it's certainly indicative of that.
That was a big battle I had in radio. I spent 20 years in news radio, and so much of our effort was tell the story shorter, tell it faster, so we can say more things about other stuff. And I fought that constantly, because I just thought, why am I, like, the argument was, if somebody's listening to this story and they find it boring, they're going to go away. Mm-hmm. But my argument is, for the person who thinks it's fascinating, they're the person we want to stick around. We shouldn't be looking for the TikTok audience that needs to be fed something new every 12 seconds. If somebody likes what we're doing, I'm going to keep giving them more of that. So there was constant, butting of heads in the newsroom of, if I had a story that went a minute, actually went a minute long, I'd be pulled into the office of, that should have been 40 seconds. And I would say, no, it wasn't. That story was brilliant. And so there was a lot of that, because it's just that short attention span. People, there's this fear that if we don't constantly bombard people with something, they're going to go away. I argue, give them something good and they will sit through all of it.
Well, and again, who are the two, you know, you look at Imus, you look at Howard Stern, 3-hour shows. Stern, you know, whatever point in his career, throws out the music entirely. And we're going to do a personality based show that's 3 hours or 4 hours. And it's going to be long stretches of dialogue before any advertising. Sorry, that pays the bills. But you know what? I'm bringing the ear holes. So yeah. that's how we're going to run it. And that shows what the audience wants as well. And you know what? It's funny. I can remember when, and we talk broadcasting backgrounds here. I've loved broadcasting and probably, if I were to look back, I mean, I'm a financial planner by trade, but if I were to be the guy who said, you know what, I'm going to chase a dream. I would have chased the dream to go into broadcasting of some sort. Mm-hmm. And I can remember when the corporations all were coming in and buying up these traditional broadcasting companies, yeah. Even up to the very top, the NBCs and the CBSs of the world, the big network heads were being purchased by these corporations. And we have seen in our lifetime the erosion of, you know, it used to be, you know, 12 minutes between commercial breaks, and then it became, you know, 10 minutes, and then it became 7 minutes, and then it, you know, and we have seen these things erode before us, and then and messages that need to be, you know, placed into you know, and even opinions need to be placed into these things. You have a fascinating perspective of that, because you, it happened kind of on your watch. You saw this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's hard because having worked in the media and heard, especially in recent years, the actual or the absolute demonization of the media. The media is the enemy. Literally, there were targets on our backs. We had to do things to keep reporters safe when they went out in the field, because there was just an order to basically take out the media. That was the way it was perceived. That's how we took it. We had very real bomb threats. We had very real situations that were very scary because we existed to tell people what was going on in their community.
Yep.
The thing about local media that got really scary toward the end of my time there was even the local stations were being bought up by the major companies. For the longest time, local media was able to just cover the news, right? The mayor had a press mm-hmm. conference. You sent a reporter. Here's what the mayor said today. Mm-hmm. Do with it what you want. Our job is to tell you what the mayor said. We're not here to give you a bunch of opinion.
Yes.
But then big media came in and bought the company I worked for. We were very lucky in that circumstance because it was a company that bought, they were a TV company. So they bought this conglomerate of TV that we had, but they also happened to get these radio stations that they didn't really know what to do with. So we were sitting over here minding our own business, doing our own thing without them really even being aware of us.
Yeah.
While we watched them tell TV, here's how you do the news now. You have to put these stories in all of your broadcasts. There's a very famous clip that John Oliver showed of the Sinclair Broadcast Group.
Conan did it too.
All these stations, everybody saying the same thing.
It's amazing.
It is. And the frightening thing is they make it seem like we're all in on it. But the fact is, I know people that are in that video that had to read that script or they would lose their jobs. So it was not like, yay, we get to be part of the propaganda machine. It was like, I got to feed my kids. Yep. I have to read this script or I lose my job.
Yep.
So yeah, blame the media, but they're still people. They're still human beings that are making very tough decisions, just like you are every day when you hate your job mm-hmm. and you got to go in and do it because that's the thing you got to do right now until you figure something else out, which a lot of them have done since then. But it was frightening to watch them come in and the literal propaganda that was forced on the airwaves every day that they tried to force us to play, but somehow I just kept forgetting.
So you're not in broadcasting anymore.
I am not. Thank goodness. Literally, my doctor told me every year at my physical, why do you keep going to that toxic job? It's killing
me. Oh, man. And that's the hard part, because it's like, clearly, and I mean, I think we've both shown this, you know, it's so fun. Doing the podcast trade thing is so fun because, you know, you've got people who, you know, there's a baseline of commonality that's there. And I appreciate that already about you. You clearly were doing the job that you were called to do. But unfortunately the idea of the fragility of the place that you were trying to do it, just started, you know, creating this dichotomy, this fissure, whatever you want to call it for you, because you're clearly doing what you want to do right now. But that's the beautiful thing about podcasting, is you can do what you want to do. And that's why they're so big. There's so many people that just want to hear that independent, the idea of reasonable conversation instead of polarization and tribalism and all that crap that seems to be, you know, people seem to be given a choice, one or the other. Well, no. We can talk about things in the middle, and we can respectfully disagree, and we can compromise, and we can do all sorts of things. Podcasting is a prime example of that.
Yeah. And the tribalism thing, I mean, I'm very lucky in that I lived in the United States my entire life up until about 3 years ago, and I moved to Canada recently. And maybe it's the small town I live in versus the big city I was in. Maybe it's the province where I live now. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the difference is, but what I can tell you is my experience in a very liberal city in the United States of America was that I witnessed the tribalism. I saw it. I know people that would not be friends, would not hang out with, would not talk with other people they disagreed with. Where here, I live in now a very conservative town. Mm-hmm. Many of the friends that I have here are much more conservative than I am, but they are my friends. We disagree about things, and that's kind of where it's like, yeah, well, I think this. Oh, yeah, well, I think this. Oh, yeah, can I get you another drink? Cool, let's go. There's just like that same need to be right, that same need to pick a side is not here in the same way. It's it's trying to be here. I definitely saw it a couple of years ago. That was with the whole like trucker movement and all that. There's plenty of things that show that some of that is starting to kind of creep in.
Yep.
But it's incredible to live in a very conservative town. And the people are just as lovely as can be and are very easy to talk to. And we can all disagree and kind of smile about it. So I don't know what it is about the scoring points, about being on the right side or whatever that is happening right now in the U.S. But I don't believe that it's like that in the rest of the world, at least not to that same extreme.
I could not agree more with you. I want to know a little bit about where the heart for the mission of your message came from. You know, it's so funny, you know, the idea of being struck by inspiration. It was a knee injury that gave you that started you on the path.
It started me on that. I mean, honestly,
getting out of bed wrong, is that what it was?
Yeah, I literally, I had a very young daughter, and the grocery delivery guy came really early one morning and knocked on the door. The dog started barking, and anybody with a brand new baby knows that if anybody wakes up the baby, the day is shot.
Yeah.
So I quickly sort of get out of bed to try and just calm the dog down so the baby doesn't wake up. Literally stepped when I got out of bed and I just collapsed. My knee buckled and couldn't put any weight on it. I had no idea what happened. Anyways, the baby didn't wake up. Everything was fine. Long story short, lots of physical therapy, doctor's appointments, still don't really know, some sort of nerve damage, literally just from standing up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But the physical therapist, I'm telling her about, you know, knee replacements in my family, the situation I was going through, some x-rays. And she says to me, you know, unless you want to repeat the pattern of everyone else getting knee replacements, you need to get on a bike as much as possible. I thought, that's insane. I haven't done that since I was six. Why am I going to start in my 30s riding a bike every day? So I did what I did at the time. I went and complained to my brother because we were doing a podcast. I'm like, this crazy doctor thinks I'm going to ride a bike. And he says, dummy, all you need to do is decide you're that weird guy that rides his bike to work every day. Just buy a bike and become a bike commuter.
Yep.
And it's one of those things where any other day, any other time, I probably would have laughed at him. But I literally in that moment went, I'm the weird guy for a lot of reasons. Why not that one? And I literally owned the identity the minute he said it. Bought a bike that week. The next week, I started the 9-mile ride to and from work every day. And the craziest part about all that is like, yeah, my knees got better. But in that ride, I suddenly found that I'm not stressing about what happened yesterday. I'm not worried about what's going to happen at work on the way. All I'm focused on is right now, how do I not die? How do I not crash into a car, a curb, a door, something? And man, I fell in love with now. I fell in love with just being present. And I remember going to my wife and just being like, I don't know what it is about being on that bike, but I want more of that in the rest of my life. How do I do it? And she said, I have absolutely no idea. Go find a therapist. So I did. I found a therapist who taught me about Buddhism and about the Dharma and about just being present, about meditating, about just slowing the F down and being here now. And man, the knee injury was the door that kicked down the door to the bike, that kicked down the door to meditation, that kicked down the door to everything else I've done for the last 10 years, mm-hmm. because I have struggled with depression and anxiety my entire life. I grew up in a house where alcoholism was present. You know, it was just one of those things where I think it was a pretty typical child experience in the United States of America in the 80s. Mm-hmm. When I talk to other people, especially here in Canada, they think you would have been the kid that the after school special was about for us. Like that's trauma. You went through trauma.
Yeah.
I don't know that I did. Yeah. You know, Zach has a much more, my co-host Zach has a much more traumatic childhood than I do. But when I found peace in being present, I just wanted to find everything I could to throw at bringing more of that into my life and finding ways to calm the voices in my head that were telling me how worthless I was, how awful I was, what a waste of space, what a waste of life. I was never going to be good enough. Why even bother? Because I could be depressed at any given moment. And so I've spent the better part of the last decade plus learning and throwing everything I can at trying to win that mental battle every day.
That's incredible. A whole bunch of places that we can go with that. Now, number one, I mean, we talk about trauma. I don't know if you've, my wife and I are just going through Gabor Mate's latest book and very much talks about that. We saw Dr. Mate speak a couple of months ago. And I mean, you know, the idea of trauma, you know, some people, I think a lot of people out there, especially middle-aged guys who have, the stigma is there for a reason. You know, there are a lot of guys that kick things under the rug, that bury things deep, whatever analogy you want to use. And they think, okay, well, no, that wasn't trauma.
Right.
I didn't deal with trauma. You think, okay, Zach, for example, that's a great way of how many men think. They compare and they're like, oh, no. But the reality is trauma is trauma.
Yeah.
It could have been something absolutely horrible and debilitating and you think of the worst childhood trauma you could think of. Okay. Or it could have been someone looked at you funny at the right time, the wrong moment in your youth. And that planted that little seed. Trauma is trauma. Your body doesn't know how to distinguish severity many times.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of guys have never learned to give themselves, the grace that needs to be given when it comes to that stuff. They've never explored that stuff. And it's interesting that, that it took a knee injury. The present thing I can relate to, you've read The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle.
I'm rereading it again now. Yeah.
Okay. It is a solid one for me. My wife and I went through a really tough time. Our granddaughter, who is my life, my granddaughter is like she's five now. She's fine. 18 months. She's at BC Children's Hospital for 6 months, foreign city. She's there with cancer, surgery, 4 rounds of chemo. She's great now, but my wife and I, that little girl is everything to us. And so we went down to Vancouver with my son and daughter-in-law, and we stayed down there the whole time while my granddaughter was in treatment. And I mean, I feel so much for thinking about where you were at, those times of uncertainty, those times of where you're talking yourself down, those times where you're thinking about the future and thinking that what if, and when you find presence and I bought that book. We did a Costco run. They happened to have it there. And I knew that I always wanted to read Power of Now, and I'd never done it. And think about cancer with a loved one. It's a lot of downtime. A lot of downtime with cancer. They don't tell you that necessarily. And so it's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to get this book and I'm going to read. And it was during the second half of her stay down there, and learning presence going through that. And oh my God, did it change my life?
Yeah.
It changed everything. And there are times where I go through this stuff as well. And what a baseline to go back to, what a baseline to kind of build things around is that being present, you know, and there's so many examples that we can talk about how we don't know what's going to happen in the future. Most of the time, the future that we project isn't going to happen anyway. There's all of that stuff. There's so much personal development out there about this stuff. But the thing I love about the idea of presence is it's ridiculously simple.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously simple. It just taking that pause, that breath, and whatever that looks like, whether it's a meditation, whether it's just letting everything go and getting into that and sinking into that moment. It is a real game changer. God, we went deep fast. And I'm not surprised.
That tends to happen in a lot of my conversations. I don't know why. It's the weirdest thing.
So let's talk about, okay, so let's marry the two things that we started this thing, the two topics that we've done here, led to a career change. Yeah, you know, you got out of broadcasting. We already know that. Had a light bulb moment. You know, we know that. That's led to where your life has moved to now. And let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about your practice.
Yeah. So, man, where do I go with that? So we, you know, I spent 20 years in radio. I finally took my doctor's advice, and it actually came thanks to COVID. You know, I have a lot to be grateful for because of that horrible 3 years of our lives.
Yep.
We found ourselves, like most people, at home, unable to be around other people, stay, you know, locked in our house, don't go near other people, don't hug other people, don't be around them. And it was weird because we kind of liked it, right? Like, we liked being with our kids. We liked having all that extra time together. All of a sudden, I'm working from home all day. My wife actually lost her job, so now she's home all day with us. We really liked being together. And having not gone through anything like that, you know, as people in hundreds of years, nobody really knew what to make of it, and nobody knew how long it was going to last. And so we started having real conversations about, what if this is permanent? What if this is the way the rest of our lives are going to go? Do we want to stay in this house, in this town, chasing the bills we can't afford, you know, trying to keep up with a house we can't afford, spending hours in traffic, getting to and from the things we're not supposed to go to anymore? Like, it just, like, everything about that made us look inward at, what do we want our life to be? We sort of, I mean, to some degree we built it, but it also kind of happened to us. And we thought, this is an opportunity for us to literally build the life that we want. And my wife was born in Canada. Just coincidentally, her dad was up here working for a couple of years when she was born. So she's born to American parents, but just happened to be here at the right time.
She's a dually.
She got the golden ticket. And so we always kind of wondered, like, why does she have that? Like, what luck, you know, thrust that upon her, and why does she have it? So that was one of the things we started looking at. And there were things happening politically that we were not super excited about at the time. There were things happening in our town that we were not super excited about being a part of anymore. And so we got really serious about exploring, what if we moved to Canada? What if we did the thing that every American says they're going to do and said, that's enough, I'm moving to Canada. Because we could, we had that luxury. So we made plans. We found a house to rent for a month because we were going to have to spend half of it in quarantine. We came up, spent 2 weeks. We literally crossed a closed border, came up, spent 2 weeks in the house, couldn't leave the yard. The kids would do laps in the yard, and we would track it on the MyFitnessPal, so you could see, like, the shapes they would try to make in the yard. So, anyways, 2 week quarantine ends. We get out, we explore BC, just like, let's find everything, because we still wanted to be close to family. We wanted to be close enough to get back to, you know, to home whenever we could. And we turned out the place that we were staying was the place that we fell in love with. And I remember, I will never forget the moment. I was standing on the porch two doors down from where I live now, and just said, that I need to live here. This is home. This is like, and I remember going home to Seattle and feeling homesick. Like, after being here for just a month, I was like, that's home now. I want to be there. And so, that was it. Within 6 months, we had gotten rid of or sold everything, sold our house. And, we were able to find this long-term rental that we're in now. And we moved up 6 months later. Unfortunately, housing prices doubled in that time. So our plan to buy something quickly evaporated pretty quickly. But that was it. So we came up, my wife actually literally got a job the day we got here. I had built enough of a side business to have some money coming in on the side while I figured out what I was going to do. Ended up in a career in podcast coaching. And that has now evolved into something else. But it just became one of those. And I hope everyone has this moment at some point in their life where they decide, I'm going to stop living the life that's handed to me, and I'm going to start building the one that I want. And it's not necessarily always going to land that way. It's not always going to be the thing you want. But when you're working toward the thing, the life that you actually want, instead of working to just keep the hamster wheel running so that the lights stay on, it's just such a more rewarding experience. At least, I mean, that's my experience so far. You're nodding your head a lot. I'm assuming you've had a similar experience.
Yeah, I mean, and it's actually this. I mean, and I told you a little bit before we hit record, but our audience kind of knows that the reason I got into this, I was always a podcast fan. I loved it, and the reason I got into it was because Candy wants to change the world. She doesn't like the world her boys are inheriting. She saw some pretty disturbing stats when it came to men, and where things are at. You know, World Health Organization calling men's mental health a silent crisis. You know, 7 out of 10 suicides middle aged men in North America, like just this, yeah. these crazy stats. And I mean, and her wanting to chase her dream of building a place, to make a mark on the world. And really at the end of the day, you know, fighting through, well, why is a woman doing this? Well, you know, maybe it's a mom. Maybe it's a mom that needs to help be the solver of this. You know, she's a non-tech founder, and she's going against all the odds. And I just wanted to do everything I could for her. And I loved podcasts, and I'll tell you this, don't get me wrong. I enjoy my job as a financial planner, but what I enjoy about it is exactly what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
The paperwork, all the stuff that comes with it, whatever that could kind of, I can take or leave that. This connecting with people.
Yeah.
Holy. And, I didn't go chase my dreams when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And it's funny hosting this show and the other show that I host, even still hamster wheeling it, as you put it, I got a lot more juice in that wheel because of what I'm doing here. And because I do feel like I'm living my purpose. I do feel like I'm exercising what I was brought here to do. And boy, does it ever, like, it's not even the destination. Like, you know, He Changed It blowing up and He Cast blowing up and my other thing blowing up. Okay, that's like icing on an already a delicious cake. In fact, it's not just icing, it's the flowers and things like that, because the process, and I think that's where talking to the people that we've talked to on this show, if there's a commonality to many of those messages, it's very similar to what you're talking about. It's not even the outcome. It's the process becomes the fun part. The journey is the fun part, which goes back again to harmony with presence, which goes back again to, you know, don't worry about the thing that you don't know what's going to happen. If you can find satisfaction in the process of getting there, it almost doesn't even matter where you get to, because that's the good stuff. And so I'm nodding my head because you're preaching to the choir on that. And I wish that every guy out there could find, if they've got an itch and they don't even know what that itch is, to figure out something inside of them that feels like purpose or feels like that inner itch that just needs to be scratched, and then put a couple action steps towards it, teeny tiny at first, but a couple action steps towards it and see what happens with their life.
Yeah. I would argue, I don't know. I don't know anyone that's won the Super Bowl, so I couldn't ask them this, but I would argue if you ask any Super Bowl champion, was it the season? Was it the week after week, the win, the thrill, the man, we almost, or was it the day and a half that you celebrated when you got the trophy that made it all worth? No, it's who you became in the process. You yes. became a champion all along. And yep. it was the lessons you learned, the hard work, the perseverance, the consistency that you had to put in every single day to become the kind of person that for a couple of days could be in the parade and hold up the trophy and whatever. But all that time was not for nothing. That was what made you that person. Yeah. And let's talk to the other 31 teams that didn't get that opportunity. Did mm-hmm. they fail? No, they learned a lot of lessons about themselves. They got a lot stronger. They got more ready for next year when it is their shot. It's always the journey. It's almost never the destination.
Yep.
There is nobody that you know loses 20 pounds and just gives up and, now I can just easy street. I'm just going to put my feet up on the couch and never do the... No, losing the 20 pounds was the result of the hard work and the consistency and the perseverance and all the things you had to do to reach that point that made you the kind of person that now you're going to take it to the next level, whatever that is for you. So yes. It's always the journey.
Oh yeah, I could not agree more. And it's just, it's so fun to have conversations like this. And I love, every time HeCast is still, you know, growing. It's in that building phase. And so I get a lot of people who it's the first time they've listened to it and they give me reaction to it. And it's so funny. At the first, I want to say the first 30 or 40 episodes, there were two things that that kind of came to the. Okay, so here's a question I'm going to ask you, but I'm going to ask it now so it gives your brain a little bit of time to think about it. Okay, I'm going to ask you if there's two or three in doing all the episodes that you've done with this focal point, if there's been any themes that have kind of come up over and over and over again. Purpose obviously is one. I can already tell that that's one of them, but I noticed it probably around episode 30 that there were two of them. The first one was vulnerability, and when it came to men, that a silver bullet is vulnerability. The second one is awareness, and many men lack both of those things, not as a fault of their own, but just because it hasn't been taught. It wasn't culturally, it was kind of passe, or it was a stigmatized, whatever you want to call it. And then the third one would probably be gratitude. Those are probably the things that have come up more than any other concept. And there are so many guys that just don't have the awareness, but when they go on that exploration of awareness, they find these fulfillments where these journeys that you're talking about get better. The rub, unfortunately, many times is that we don't go on these journeys until something horrible happens. A relationship breaks down. Somebody passes away. We lose a business. We hit a rock bottom moment somehow, some way. But it doesn't have to be that way. Mm. There's a lot of guys out there who are living quiet lives of desperation where they don't have to hit that rock bottom before they can go and find some awareness that leads to some of that vulnerability that can then be a gateway to these things we're talking about.
You mentioned similar topics, vulnerability, self-awareness, all these things. I believe those are the tools you discover at the other end of using curiosity.
The minute, I love that. Yeah.
The minute you get curious about why am I doing the things that I'm doing?
Yep.
All of a sudden you realize, because I'm unwilling to be vulnerable. Yep. I'm not self-aware. I'm doing something I learned from watching my parents do it. It's not even me. I've been telling the story lately. I don't know if my mom is horrified by it or not, but I'm going to tell it again. I'm at my mom's house Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. Everyone's in town. Like, my brother flew out. Everybody's there. We've all got different dietary restrictions, right? There's the vegetarian. There's the gluten-free. There's the whatever. My mom made four lasagnas for Thanksgiving. Four. Do you know how hard it is to make one lasagna? She made four. I stood there in the kitchen watching her put the finishing touches on everything. And I'm hearing her set the bar so low on everything that she'd done. I'm sitting there in awe of what she did, knowing nothing other than that's four lasagnas. That's crazy. But this one's going to be a little watery. This one's, it's been done for a while. It might be cool. Setting the bar super low. And I love my mom. She's the best. Mm-hmm. But I'm watching this and I'm hearing this and this light bulb went off. And I was like, oh my God, that is the voice in my, I do the same thing. I try to make everyone be cool with the fact that I just showed up so that anything I do above that is like gold medal, right? Like he showed up and he asked a question. Wow. What a hero, right? Like, so it was just this mind blowing moment where like I heard my mom and I was able to identify this voice that has been in me, holding me back, setting the bar low for myself, setting the bar low for everybody else. And it's not her fault. She's repeating what she watched growing up, right? Mm-hmm. But it's probably something that I picked up when I was two or three, watching her and the way she interacted with people. I started mm-hmm. thinking about other like worse thoughts that I have in my head that mm-hmm. were planted by things I heard my dad say, that for years I thought, that's me. I'm broken. The wiring's messed up. And no, I heard that person do it. And because I hadn't yet separated that we are different people, that mm-hmm. meant it was true for me too. So I immediately got even more curious about where do all these thoughts that I wrestle with, everything that I think makes me who I am, where do they come from?
Yeah.
And in a lot of the deep work that I've done, I've been able to discover it's just other people's ideas that I heard and I adapted because I didn't know any better. Yeah. But now I know, and I've learned how to turn the voices off. I literally remember the last time I thought to myself, you idiot. And I caught it and I went, or you're busy. You made a mistake.
Yeah.
It happens to people. I don't have that voice anymore. That voice that told me how, what a loser I am, how awful I am, how I don't deserve love. I don't deserve this. I don't deserve that. It's gone. The absence of it is almost terrifying sometimes because it's so quiet in my head when there was a soundtrack of what, you know, a loser, what an awful person I was and how, you know, I felt pity for anyone who had to put up with my presence.
Wow. I got to ask this question because I think I know the answer. Are you a Joe Dispenza guy? Do you like Joe Dispenza? Dr. Joe
Dispenza?
I love
Joe Dispenza. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I listened to a podcast he was on with. I think it was My Let's podcast. I've listened to a few that he's been on, but he talks about the formation of a personality. I'll tell you this. I went back and I actually used it. So, born and raised in Western Canada, I'm a gigantic Los Angeles Kings fan, gigantic. Okay. And that's a weird thing because normally people around me cheer for the home team, the Vancouver Canucks. I've cheered for the Kings since I was a little kid. I was listening to Joe Dispenza on a podcast once, and he was talking about the formation of personality and how many times, and you don't know when it's going to happen, but kids in elementary school, kindergarten, grade one, grade two, whatever. If one day a little kid decides that day, for whatever reason, that they're shy, it can take hold and start. And if they say the next day, oh, I'm shy, for whatever reason, they might have heard another kid say it. And this is where it goes back to and suddenly it's 5 years later and you've got a kid who will not go in front of the class and they just decided accidentally to become shy. And now they have formed their personality and the neuroplasticity kicks in and pathways freeze up and continue on and grow and keep growing. And now a personality trait is born.
Yep.
And reversing it back. And what I did was when I heard that podcast, I'm like, okay, let's take something about me that I is like I'm a diehard Kings fan. And I went back to the day that I decided to be a Kings fan as a little kid.
Yeah.
You know, the counterculture, I don't want to cheer for everybody, the team that everyone else is cheering for. There's a player named Marcel Dion who, you know, my dad said something about him. And I was just like, okay, yeah, you know what? I'm a Kings fan now. And I could have very easily decided something else entirely, including not even to enjoy hockey. Like it could have been, you know, it's such a, our brains are, it's so fascinating where our ideals come from, where our morals come from, the flags that we plant so deeply, where that drive comes from.
Yeah.
And once you realize that you can actually unpack some of these things and that curiosity that you were talking about, mm-hmm. I could not agree more. That is such a beautiful thing to have. Easier said than done, especially mm-hmm. when you've got the pressures of life beating on you and the introspection and whatnot. And this is where things like meditation and some of these other present building vehicles can really, really help get rid of some of that confusion and get rid of the voice entirely. That is a powerful, powerful testament that you just talked about.
Yeah. And a couple things about that. I mean, for one, it's not only about choosing that identity on any random moment, but when somebody calls your kid shy, they start to assume,
there it is.
I guess I'm shy. That's who I am now for the next 40 years until I get curious about why I've always thought I'm shy. Here's the good news, though. We thought forever that neuroplasticity was not a thing, that like whatever was locked in was locked in. Guess what? You can decide to be the weird guy that rides his bike to work every day. Oh. You can decide to be the guy that that goes to the gym three times a week. You can decide to be the guy that climbs a mountain. You can decide to be the guy that quits that toxic job and builds a better life. It's not easy. It's painfully simple. It is painfully simple to walk in and say, guys, I quit. I'm out. Is that easy? God, no. It's one of the hardest things you'll ever do because the terror and the fear of how do I pay the rent? How do I pay the mortgage? How do I feed my kids? I don't say to make these changes lightly, but I do encourage you to make them because if you are miserable, if you are tired of your own stuff being in your own way, there's only one person responsible for getting it out of your way, and it's you. Mm-hmm. You didn't put it there. But it's your responsibility to clean it up. So I just can't encourage you enough to get curious about why am I miserable? Why am I in my own way? What are the blocks that are keeping me from accomplishing the life that I want to accomplish? Because I guarantee when you get down to it, it's probably you. There's this joke, there's this line from Homer Simpson that I've always kind of adapted that I think is beautiful. In the show, in The Simpsons, he says, to alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Hilarious line, but when you adapt it to I am the cause of and solution to all of my own problems, man, what an empowering thing to realize that it's all up to you. You just have to take responsibility for the mess that somebody put on your front yard, clean it up because nobody else is going to do it for you.
Yeah, it's been said in many, many, many books. I believe Mark Manson said it in The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I'm pretty sure it's nothing is your fault, but everything is your responsibility. And or 100%. not everything is your fault, but everything is your responsibility. Yep. And that is a truth that there are a lot of people who, if they understood that, if we embrace it, this is the stuff we got to teach in school.
Yep.
Like I believe, my financial planning background, I believe money should be taught, from grades 8 to 12. But more importantly, I think relationships need to be taught between grades 8 and 12. Imagine if kids at school were taught about the different personality types, about active listening, about some of these things that are really easy to do, really easy not to do. But if you don't know them, you'll never learn how to do them. And that is an amazing concept about responsibility and how, and it can be simple. If you tell somebody, like my dad had anger issues, okay? And I grew up in a house, and I've had my dad on HeCast a couple of times. He's coming on again. My dad went on a personal development journey in his mid-50s. And he lost my mom. My mom moved all the way back to the East Coast, and his anger issues had gotten to the point where it was just – and he never hit us, but it was trauma and screaming and yelling and horribleness. And he grew up in trauma. And so he didn't pass alcohol to us, but – the anger that he had, the trauma that he took it out on us. And my mom finally had enough. He took off. And then my dad goes on this, he had this rock bottom moment. And it's so funny when you talk to my dad now, and we had him on the show, and I have this hour and a half conversation shot in gorgeous HD of me and my dad going through this stuff together.
Wow.
And I get to share that for the rest of my life. I get to have that, where he literally goes through some of this stuff, and he talks about his moment when he realized that everything was his responsibility and it was up to him. The anger was there. It was up to him what to do with it. And he could just decide to not use it in a negative way. Like, it was the easiest decision in the world for him.
Yeah.
But coming to the place of realization of how simple that decision was, it took him decades. And isn't it funny how that's the case for us?
When you have a lifetime of modeling, of enacting the behavior that was modeled of being a victim, that the world is just out to get you. You're not meant for success. That's for other people.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to make it. Cause when that's what you grow up seeing, and that's the story you keep hearing over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And you keep hearing that person say they're going to take the easy way out and constantly making that threat. All that stuff becomes you. It squirrels away, and all of a sudden the tone of the voice changes. It's not them anymore. Now it's your own voice telling you that maybe you're not meant for this world. Maybe it's all too hard for you. Maybe you'll never get there. But when you can get control of that and recognize that you did not put that voice there, nobody walking around on this planet was put here to take their own life, right? Like, yeah. That's not normal. That is something that you learn. That is something that, and don't get me wrong, there is diagnosable, like I've been there. I've dealt with depression. I'm not trying to downplay people to deal with this stuff. I've been there. I know what it's like to not get out of bed for days. I know what it's like to not be able to leave a dark room because you're ashamed to be in the light.
Yep.
So I have so much empathy for people going through that stuff. And there is some wiring. There is some medication that can help to get through that. And like, I'm not taking anything away from those people.
Yep.
But that is not the wiring you were built with. That is the wiring that you developed through your experience, through the trauma, through whatever that you were exposed to. And undoing it sometimes takes that medication. Sometimes it takes deep, deep work for years and years and years. But it just, like even now, I'm getting emotional because I'm so pissed off that it took me until my 40s to figure out that's not me. All that stuff that I kept telling myself I was going to do, all that fear, all that shame, none of it was ever me, despite the fact that I believed it to my core for most of my life.
That is so powerful. Did this transformation happen to you personally, and that's what led to the coaching? Is that how, is that the order of events that happened, or did you find it? Did you come to this real, for lack of a better term, a come to Jesus moment about this through becoming a coach? Was it all gradual? How did that happen for you? And tell everybody about what it is that you do
now. I mean, in terms of coaching, I mean, a lot of it is just professional, podcasting and stuff. I help people occasionally with sort of life coaching stuff. Mm-hmm. But to me, much like you, podcasting is the passion. It's mm-hmm. it's something that I love doing. It is a way for me to talk to me 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I want that guy who is early in his marriage, maybe not yet married. Maybe he's about to have kids. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what life's throwing at him. He's just trying to keep up. He's trying to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what his driving purpose is. He's just getting started. And he knows something doesn't feel right. Something's mm-hmm. not connecting for him. He's probably got a little extra weight he wants to lose. And he's tried all the diets and they work for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, that guy who just needs someone to tell him there's a better way. And I don't mean the guy on the mountaintop. I don't mean the guy that's got it figured out. I want him to find me just around the corner saying, I'm pretty sure it's this way, because he's lost right now and has no idea. So for me, it's the podcast has been that, has been trying to talk to me several years ago and give that guy some hope and give him some companionship and let him know that he's not alone, because guys do not have guys to talk to about this stuff.
Yep.
Let me take that back. They probably do, but they're not willing to be vulnerable enough to find them.
Yeah.
My co-host and I were sort of thrust into each other's lives and built this show around it. Our wives were pregnant at the same time. And so they were in this like fit mom program where they were going to participate in a triathlon within, you know, 4 months or something after giving birth, some crazy Herculean, you know, accomplishment. But they got talking and they're like, oh, hey, your nerdy husband also likes Star Wars. We should get them together for brunch. And so we did what guys do. We come to the brunch and, hey, did you watch the sports ball event that I also don't care about? Yes, I did. How about that sports ball event? You know, and just doing the small talk, the guy thing where you size each other up and what's this guy's deal.
Yeah.
That went on for a while. And then once the kids came, it opened the door to, God, are you getting any sleep? How's that going for you? How are you dealing with all this stuff? And the wall started to come down brick by brick. And all of a sudden it was, I'll never forget this moment. I was at a birthday party for a mutual friend for their child. And it was one of those things where I don't do well in crowds. I got overwhelmed. I went out and sat in the car and I'm just sitting there trying to like get my shit together. Mm-hmm. And I look over and Zach's knocking on the window and I open the door and he's like, what's going on? You all right? And that's when I knew he got it. Like, mm-hmm. this is that guy. This is the guy I can go to with, you know, this is too much. I need a place for this to land. So I don't know that, you know, where that, how to find that guy, but I do know that you find them by being vulnerable, by opening up, by asking questions, by getting to know who they are, giving them a chance to vent their stuff. Because we all have it, even though, you know, as guys, we're not supposed to. We're supposed to be the, you know, the Iron Man tough guy that can just take on anything. And that's just what society says is the case. But we got scars too, man. And it is hard. And a friend of mine was talking about this. Her husband's been going through a hard time. And mm-hmm. she's just like, how many guys are out there just busting their ass for a family that could not care less? And it's pain. That's painful. Like, I bust my ass and my family loves me for it. Like they love me anyways, right? I'm one of the fortunate ones. And sure, I feel unappreciated and I feel like they don't give a damn sometimes. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I know they really do. But I know there is somebody listening to this right now that is going, yeah, that is 100% me. My wife doesn't give me the time of day. My kids can't stand me. They get home and they look at their tablet. I haven't talked to either of them in 4 days. Like I know they're out there because they're not. I don't want to say willing. They maybe just don't know how to open up and say, this is what I need and I deserve it. Can you please help me get it?
Yeah. They don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
They're not aware. They just don't know. They just know it's not right. And resentment shows up. I recently really looked into cognitive behavioral therapy and have gone down that path a little bit to see the steps and the tools. The thing I like about it is it's a bunch of tools. And one of the things it talks about is the primary emotion versus the secondary emotion. The primary emotion of being hurt because people are ungrateful for you and the effort that you're putting in, that's hurt. The secondary emotion is where we get into trouble. Mm-hmm. It becomes the anger, the resentment, the after effect of the primary emotion. And if you're not aware of that, if you're just angry because of, if you're lashing out, if you are aware, say nobody cares about me, nobody's grateful for what it is that I'm doing for me busting my ass. Many times the idea of being able to go back and go, well, wait, what's the primary emotion? Primary emotion is that I'm hurt. Yeah. Is there something I can do about that?
can we have a family meeting where I can say, hey, did you know that you are all hurting me to death? Whether it be through self-infliction, whether it be through heart attack, whether it be through horrible cells building in my body because of things that are, you know, did you know that you are hurting me to death right now?
Yeah.
And maybe if they are able to deal with that primary emotion and communicate those things, easier said than done, though. And I'm so grateful we're having this dialogue right now, because whether it's on my side, whether it's on your side of people, you know, that we bring to this, whatever, whether it's a random thing of a guy listening to this show for the very first time, you know, we feel you, we see you, we you know, you're not alone. And that is another silver bullet too. The fact, and this is why stuff like this is so important, why my wife's app is so important, why your show is so important. It's to show men they're not alone.
And that's literally why we do the show, is that I want me 15 years ago to hear guys talking. Literally, Zach is the one that came to me with the idea for the show. And I thought he was completely nuts. I had been doing a show where I got completely drunk and told stupid stories that were embarrassing because it made people laugh. That was what podcasting was for me. And I loved the hell out of every minute of it.
Yep.
Until I didn't. Because part of this journey, and what you were talking about there was, you know, men being not being aware, not even necessarily knowing that feeling is going on. Most of them are grabbing 12 ounces of pain relief and drinking it away. That's how they're coping. I'm not saying they're all alcoholics.
Nope.
But I know that most of my life, the medicine I put on that pain was alcohol. And so that's what I did week after week. And it was a hilarious show. But when I finally got to a point where I was like, I'm not going to do this anymore, I couldn't be that character anymore. I kept trying to show up to that show and be funny, to be this, I put on the mask, dance monkey dance. Right. Yep. And I couldn't do it anymore. And so I finally pulled the plug, and I had been going through this experience with Zach. And like, he was kind of on this biohacking journey, just like I was. We were both trying to lose some weight, learning some things from each other. And that's when we're starting talking about, we're being new dads and being opening up and being vulnerable. Zach comes to me and he says, I don't hear guys talking like this. Mm-hmm. You were a great podcaster. I would love to podcast. We should do a podcast where we just have the same conversations we're having out in the open so that other guys can hear that guys can talk like this and it's okay. And I said, you're completely insane. There's no way I'm doing that because I don't have anything on my wall that says I'm an authority. I don't have any expertise in this. I'm just a guy who's done some stuff and it's kind of worked for me.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, that's enough. And so he twisted my arm for a while. We gave it a shot. We interviewed a few people together and I realized he was right. Like that's literally just if some other guy can hear other guys talking about their feelings, talking about their emotions and also being able to change a tire, then maybe it'll normalize it for them and they'll be able to get in touch with those feelings so that they can go to their family and say, hey, the thing you did really irritated me, but underneath all of it is that it hurts. I want you guys to acknowledge that it hurts for me. And sometimes that's all you need is the acknowledgement of the feeling to solve the problem. Because it's not about the dishes. It's not about the laundry. It's about the way it makes the other person feel when you don't show up fully and be yourself and contribute to the family.
That is gospel. You are preaching. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am for this dialogue. This is such truth that so many people need to, it's so simple and yet people need to hear it. It's water in the desert. It really is. So tell people about the podcast, where to find it. The FitMess podcast, fitmess.com, right?
Yeah, that's it. It's the fitmess.com.
Is it as simple as it sounds or what?
It really is as simple as it sounds. It was, we were trying to come up with that thing that sort of describes that it is about fitness. It is about taking care of yourself, but it's about the fact that it's a mess, right? Mm-hmm. Most of us that are just starting out on this journey, this is the analogy Zach makes all the time. If your house is like hoarder level, out of control, piles everywhere, mm-hmm. you're going to look at that thing and go, no way I can clean that up.
Right.
It's just not doable.
Yep.
But all of a sudden you got to go to the bathroom. So you're going to clear a path to the bathroom. And then you'll realize then, oh, I also need to go to the kitchen to get some water. You're going to clear another path. Mm-hmm. And if we can just help you find ways to clear the paths to the things you need to do, all of a sudden you look around and realize this isn't that bad. If I just take this one step at a time, one path at a time, I can clean this mess of a life up. And so we were trying to find a way to encapsulate that. And we have thrown just all kinds of terrible ideas at each other. And one day we're talking and his wife walks by, is now ex-wife, but she walks by and she says, "Idiots, why don't you just call it the Fit Mess?" And we're like, gold, stamp it.
Thank
Let's
you.
Go.
Thank you. Yep, there it is. Meeting adjourned.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's. And you've had some crazy guests on.
Crazy guests. Yeah.
Like you've had some real crazy guests on. Let's just go through a laundry list four or five first ones that appear.
My favorite author that completely changed my life, Ryan Holiday, was on the show. When I got into biohacking, I discovered Dave Asprey, who is the godfather of biohacking. We've had him on a couple of times.
Yeah.
Sean T, the insanity workout guy. We have him in our cell phone now. Like we've gotten to know him. We've been on each other's shows a few times. Tony Horton changed my life. The creator of the P90X workout.
Yeah.
He was the one that I was doing what I did, right? Whining to him on the show about, but I hate the gym. I don't want to go. I don't like working out. It sucks. How do I get the motivation? He looks me in the eye through Zoom and says, "I'm talking directly to you. When I say this, your purpose sucks. You need to find a better purpose that is worth the effort that you need to put in to take care of yourself." Literally hearing that man tell me your purpose sucks is all it took to get me on the right path. I still didn't have the plan. I still didn't know how to do it. And I found that later, but that was the light bulb of like, wow, someone like that identified that and he was dead on. I had, I had no reason. I was going because I knew if I'm going to be this fitness guy, I better go to the gym. Well, that's not a good enough reason, but I've since discovered how much it completely destroys my depression if I stay in the gym consistently. Mm-hmm. So if I want to keep losing that battle and being miserable and overweight and suck, then I can keep not going to the gym and I can keep playing video games on my couch.
Yep.
But if I want to be the dad I want to be, the man I want to be, the husband I want to be, the everything I'm supposed to be here to be,
yep,
I got to go put in the work every day. So that conversation changed my life. Man, there's so many others that aren't coming to my mind right now, but those are just a few. Oh, actually our very first guest was, I just had his name, Daniel. Now I feel bad that I even went down this rabbit hole. Cause
nope, that's okay. That's okay. We can look it up. We should look it up and we should do that. Okay. So, and that's all right. And we can edit this part out anyway.
Cause
we're on Riverside now.
There we go. Daniel Siegel.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Daniel Siegel, like one of the most brilliant minds when it comes to meditation, was our very first guest.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. Episode one was with Daniel Siegel on our podcast.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. What are the aspirations for the show? Do you have dream guests? Do you have any white whales that you want to have on?
You know, there's people that we have been hesitant to reach out to. I think for the same reasons a lot of podcasters are hesitant to reach out. And it's just that sort of that fear of rejection or whatever. And,
sure.
And I'm past all that now. But
People
like Jewel, I think, have really interesting stories to tell. Alanis Morissette.
Her story is unbelievable. Yeah.
Zach is a big Metallica fan. What's his name? James Hetfield.
Hetfield, yep.
Big men's mental health awareness guy. Like, we want to start kind of going after people like that I think can help amplify the message a little more. We've talked to so many life coaches and so many, people in this space. And like you said, there's a lot of common themes, but I think, if we can get people to really light a fire under the blowtorch that is, sharing that message out, those are the kind of targets that we have now that, like the Brené Browns of the world, like people like I would love to pick their brains. I mean, I realize these people can talk to anybody, right? Like they can go anywhere. Why are they going to talk to us? That's part of why we haven't sent the email. But I also know that looking at the list of people we've had on, we had them on because we sent the email. So that's what it comes down to is, again, when you want something out of life, you just got to ask for it. And it's amazing how often it shows up.
The door's open. And that is I think if there's something that we want to, it goes so fast, as being in the flow, that's the thing. Yeah. Time disappears.
Totally disappears.
And I mean, like it's an hour already. And I'm blown away. I cannot wait till our next collaboration. I can't wait for that. I can't wait till we can figure out ways to integrate other shows like this into He Changed It. He Changed It right now. The app store is there. Guys can go in there and get lots of guys every day are in the app and looking at it. It is beta. It's not being updated the way that it's going to be when this thing is funded and goes to the next level. This thing is literally a blueprint. And the roadmap is so big. A big part of that roadmap is collaboration, is linking arms with guys like you and Zach and shows like what you're doing and movements with like what you're doing and coaches and different disciplines and all of that stuff, all in the name of creating a massive, massive place where guys can go and find fulfillment, find healing, find, satisfaction, find presence, all the things that we need to tackle what this world is dealing to us right now. The things that that separate us far outnumber the things that divide us, and us getting together and having conversations like this is a prime example of that. Jeremy, thank you for being in the world. Thank you for sharing your journey with everybody. I can't wait to meet Zach at some point. Thank you very much for taking time to be on HeCast today.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing, because I know that there are guys out there trying to find that resource. They're trying to find that answer to that question. The fact that you guys are on this path with us is so, I'm just so grateful for it. So keep up the great work, and lots of more collaboration to come.
Oh, fantastic. I appreciate that so much. This is why we do the show. I just appreciate Jeremy and the mark that he's making in the world here. He is a light in a world that needs more light. And there's a lot of light out there. If you haven't downloaded the HeCHangeIt app, what the heck are you waiting for? Go to HeCHangeIt.com for the all the deets. Whatever your technological persuasion is, the links are there, as is the mission of HeCHangeIt and much, much, much more. And I just want to say thank you very much. This has been another episode of HeCast, the official podcast of HeCHangeIt. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something.